हरे कृष्ण
कृष्ण
हरे कृष्ण
कृष्ण कृष्ण कृष्ण कृष्ण कृष्ण कृष्ण हे कृष्ण 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 हे कृष्ण 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 रक्ष माम कृष्ण 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 पाहि माम राम राघव रक्ष माम कृष्ण केशव कृष्ण केशव पाहि माम ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्दस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः नमः ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमाते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवारी पश्चाच्छदेशधारिणे. Last night we read the preface to the Krishna book, and tonight we're starting with the introduction, which is page 1. While attempting to write this book, Krishna, let me first offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, Om Vishnupad 108, Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. Then let me offer my respectful obeisances to the ocean of mercy, Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself, appearing in the role of a devotee, just to distribute the highest principles of devotional service. Lord Chaitanya began his preaching from the country known as Gaudadesh, West Bengal. And as I belong to the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, I must therefore offer my respectful obeisances to the disciplic succession of that name. This Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya is also known as the Brahma Sampradaya, because the disciplic succession originally began from Brahma. Brahma instructed the sage Narada, Narada instructed Vyasadeva, and Vyasadeva instructed Madhva Muni. Or Madhvacharya. Sri Madhavendra Puri, the originator of the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, was a sannyasi, renunciate, who belonged to the Madhvacharya disciplic succession. He had many renowned disciples such as Nityananda Prabhu, Advaita Prabhu, and Ishwarapuri. Ishwarapuri happened to be the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So let us offer our respectful obeisances to Ishwarapuri, Nityananda Prabhu, Sri Advaita Acharya Prabhu, Srivas Pandit, and Sri Gadadhar Pandit. Next, let us offer our respectful obeisances to Surup Damodar, who acted as the private secretary to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and let us offer our respectful obeisances to Sri Vasudev Datta, and the constant attendant of Lord Chaitanya, Sri Govinda, and the constant friend of Lord Chaitanya, Mukunda, and also to Murari Gupta. And let us offer our respectful obeisances to the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Raghunath Das Goswami. Krishna himself has explained in the Bhagavad Gita that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that whenever there are discrepancies in the regulative principles of man's religious life, and a prominence of irreligious activities, he appears on this earthly planet. In other words, when Lord Sri Krishna appeared, there was a necessity of minimizing the load of sinful activities accumulated on this planet or in this universe. For affairs of the material creation, Lord Mahavishnu, the plenary portion of Krishna, is in charge. Thus, when the Lord descends, the incarnation emanates from Vishnu. Mahavishnu is the original cause of the material creation, and from him, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu expands, and then Shiradakshayi Vishnu. Generally, all the incarnations appearing within this material universe are plenary expansions from Shiradakshayi Vishnu. Therefore, the business of minimizing the overload of sinful activities on this earth does not belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself. But when Krishna appears, all the Vishnu expansions join with him. Krishna's different expansions, namely Narayan, the quadruple expansion of Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, as well as partial plenary expansions like Matsya, the incarnation of a fish, and the Yuga avatars, incarnations for the millennium, and the Manvantara avatars, incarnations associated with the reigns of the Manus, all combine together and appear with the body of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is the complete whole, and thus all plenary expansions and incarnations always live with him. Therefore, when Krishna appeared, Lord Vishnu was with him. Krishna actually appears in order to demonstrate his Vrindavan pastimes and in this way attract the fortunate conditioned souls and invite them back home, back to Godhead. The killing of the demons in Vrindavan was carried out only by the Vishnu portion of Krishna. The Lord's abode is described in the Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter, 20th verse, where it is stated that there is another eternal nature, the spiritual sky, which is transcendental to this manifested and non-manifested matter. The manifested world can be seen in the form of many stars and planetary systems, such as the sun and the moon. But beyond this, there is a non-manifested portion, which is not approachable by anyone in this body. And beyond that non-manifested matter is the spiritual kingdom. That kingdom is described in the Bhagavad Gita as supreme and eternal, never to be annihilated. This material nature is subjected to repeated creation and annihilation. But that part, the spiritual nature, remains as it is eternally. The spiritual abode of the Personality of Godhead Krishna is also described in the Brahma Samhita as the abode of Chintamani. That abode of Lord Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, is full of palaces made of touchstone. There the trees are called desire trees and the cows are called Surabhi. The Lord is served there by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. His name is Govinda, the primeval Lord, and he is the cause of all causes. There the Lord plays his flute. His eyes are like lotus petals, and the color of his body is like that of a beautiful cloud. On his head is a peacock feather. He is so attractive that he excels thousands of cupids. Lord Krishna gives only a little hint in the Gita of his personal abode, which is the supermost planet in the spiritual kingdom. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna actually appears with all his paraphernalia and demonstrates his activities in Vrindavan, then at Mathura, and then at Dwarka. The subject matter of this book will gradually reveal all these activities. The family in which Krishna appeared is called the Yadu dynasty. This Yadu dynasty belongs to the family descending from Soma, the god in the moon planet. There are two different Kshatriya families of the royal order, one descending from the king of the moon planet and the other descending from the king of the sun planet. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, he generally appears in a Kshatriya family because he has to establish religious principles or the life of righteousness. The Kshatriya family is the protector of the human race according to the Vedic system. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as Lord Ramachandra, he appeared in the family descending from the sun god, known as the Raghu Vamsha. And when he appeared as Lord Krishna, he did so in the family known as the Yadu Vamsha. There's a long list of the kings of the Yadu Vamsha in the 9th canto, 24th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. All of them were great, powerful kings. Krishna's father's name was Vasudeva, son of Shurasena, descending from the Yadu dynasty. Actually, the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not belong to any dynasty of this material world, but the family in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears becomes famous by his grace. For example, sandalwood is produced in the states of Malaya. Sandalwood has its own qualifications apart from Malaya. But because accidentally this wood is mainly produced in the states of Malaya, it is known as Malayan sandalwood. Similarly, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, belongs to everyone, but just as the sun rises from the east, although there are other directions from which it could rise, so by his own choice the Lord appears in a particular family, and that family becomes famous. As explained above, when Krishna appears, all his plenary expansions appear with him. Krishna appeared along with Balaram, Baladev, who is known as his elder brother. Balaram is the original Sankarsana of the quadruple expansion. Balaram is also the plenary expansion of Krishna. In this book, the attempt will be made to show how Krishna appeared in the family of the Yadu dynasty and how he displayed his transcendental characteristics. This is very vividly described in Srimad Bhagavatam, specifically the 10th canto, and thus the basis of this book will be the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The pastimes of the Lord are generally heard and relished by liberated souls. Those who are conditioned souls are interested in reading stories of the material activities of some common man. Although similar narrations describing the transcendental activities of the Lord are found in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas, the conditioned souls still prefer to study ordinary narrations. They are not so interested in studying the narrations of the pastimes of the Lord Krishna. And yet the descriptions or the pastimes of Lord Krishna are so attractive that they are relishable for all classes of men. There are three classes of men in this world. One class consists of liberated souls, another consists of those who are trying to be liberated, and the third consists of materialistic men. Whether one is liberated or is trying to be liberated or is even grossly materialistic, the pastimes of Lord Krishna are worth studying. Liberated souls have no interest in materialistic activities. The impersonalist theory that after liberation one becomes inactive and need not hear anything does not prove that a liberated person is actually inactive. A living soul cannot be inactive. He is active either in the conditioned state or in the liberated state. A diseased person, for example, is also active, but his activities are all painful. The same person, when freed from the diseased condition, is still active, but in the healthy condition, the activities are full of pleasure. Similarly, the impersonalists only seek to get free from the diseased, conditioned activities, but they have no information of activities in the healthy condition. Those who are actually liberated and in full knowledge take to hearing the activities of Krishna. Such engagement is pure spiritual activity. It is essential for persons who are actually liberated to hear about the pastimes of Krishna. That is the supreme, relishable subject matter for one in the liberated state. Also, if persons who are trying to be liberated hear such narrations as the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, then their path of liberation becomes very clear. The Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study of Srimad Bhagavatam. By studying the Gita, one becomes fully conscious of the position of Lord Krishna. And when he is situated at the lotus feet of Krishna, he understands the narrations of Krishna as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya has therefore advised his followers that their business is to propagate Krishna Katha. Krishna Katha means narrations about Lord Krishna. There are two Krishna Kathas, narrations spoken by Krishna and narrations spoken about Krishna. This Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita, is the narration or the philosophy on the science of God spoken by Krishna himself. Srimad Bhagavatam is the narration about the activities and transcendental pastimes of Krishna. Both are Krishna Katha. It is the order of Lord Chaitanya that Krishna Katha should be spread all over the world, because if the conditioned souls suffering under the pangs of material existence take to Krishna Katha, then their path of liberation will be open and clear. The purpose of presenting this book is primarily to induce people to understand Krishna or Krishna Katha, because thereby they can become freed from material bondage. This Krishna Katha will also be very much appealing to the most materialistic persons, because Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, cowherd girls, are exactly like the loving affairs between young girls and boys within this material world. Actually, the sex feeling found in human society is not unnatural, because this same sex feeling is there in the original personality of Godhead. The pleasure potency is called Srimati Radharani. The attraction of loving affairs on the basis of sex feeling is the original feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we, the conditioned souls, being part and parcel of the Supreme, have such feelings also. But they are experienced within a perverted, minute condition. Therefore, when those who are after sex life in this material world hear about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, they will relish transcendental pleasure, although it appears to be materialistic. The advantage will be that they will gradually be elevated to the spiritual platform. In the Bhagavatam, it is stated that if one hears the pastimes of Lord Krishna with the gopis from authorities with submission, then he will be promoted to the platform of transcendental loving service to the Lord, and the material disease of lust within his heart will be completely vanquished. In other words, such hearing will counteract material sex life. This book, Krishna, which is filled with Krishna Katha, will thus appeal equally to the liberated souls and to persons who are trying to be liberated, as well as to the gross conditioned materialist. According to the statement of Maharaj Parikshit, who heard about Krishna from Shukadeva Goswami, Krishna Katha is equally applicable to every human being, whatever condition of life he is in. Surely everyone will appreciate it to the highest magnitude. But Maharaj Parikshit also warned that persons who are simply engaged in killing animals and in killing themselves may not be very much attracted to Krishna Katha. In other words, ordinary persons who are following the regulative moral principles of scriptures, no matter in what condition they are found, will certainly be attracted, but not persons who are killing themselves. The exact word used in Srimad Bhagavatam is pashugna, which means one who is killing animals or killing himself. Persons who are not self-realized and who are not interested in spiritual realization are killing themselves. They are committing suicide. Because this human form of life is especially meant for self-realization, by neglecting this important part of his activities, one simply wastes his time like the animals. So he is pashugna. The other meaning of the word refers to those who are actually killing animals. This means persons who are animal eaters, even dog eaters, for they are engaged in killing animals in so many ways, such as hunting and opening slaughterhouses. Such persons cannot be interested in Krishna Katha. King Parikshit was especially interested in hearing Krishna Katha because he knew that his forefathers, particularly his grandfather Arjuna, were victorious in the great battle of Kurukshetra only because of Krishna. We may also take this material world as a battlefield of Kurukshetra. Everyone is struggling hard for existence on this battlefield, and at every step there is danger. According to Maharaj Parikshit, the battlefield of Kurukshetra was just like a vast ocean full of dangerous animals. His grandfather Arjuna had to fight with such great heroes as Bhishma, Drona, Karna, and many others who are not ordinary fighters. Such warriors have been compared to the Timangila fish in the ocean. The Timangila fish can very easily swallow up big whales. The great fighters on the battlefield of Kurukshetra could swallow many, many Arjunas very easily, but simply due to Krishna's mercy, Arjuna was able to kill all of them. Just as one can cross with no exertion over the little bit of water contained in the hoof print of a calf, so Arjuna, by the grace of Krishna, was able to very easily jump over the ocean of the Battle of Kurukshetra. Maharaj Parikshit very much appreciated Krishna's activities for many other reasons. Not only was his grandfather saved by Krishna, but he himself was also saved by Krishna. By the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, all the members of the Kuru dynasty, both the sons and grandsons on the side of Dhritarashtra and those on the side of the Pandavas, had died in the fighting. Except the five Pandava brothers, everyone died on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Maharaj Parikshit was at that time within the womb of his mother. His father Abhimanyu, the son of Arjuna, also died on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and so Maharaj Parikshit was a posthumous child. When he was in the womb of his mother, a Brahmastra weapon was released by Ashwatthama to kill the child. When Parikshit Maharaj's mother, Uttara, approached Krishna, Krishna, seeing the danger of abortion, entered her womb as the Supersoul and saved Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit's other name is Vishnuratha because he was saved by Lord Vishnu himself still within the womb. Thus, everyone in any condition of life should be interested in hearing about Krishna and his activities because he is the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead. He is all-pervading. Inside, he is living within everyone's heart, and outside, he is living as his universal form. And yet, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, he appears as he is in the human society just to invite everyone to his transcendental abode, back home, back to Godhead. Everyone should be interested in knowing about Krishna, and this book is presented with this purpose, that people may know about Krishna and be perfectly benefited in this human form of life. In the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Baladev is described as the son of Rohini, a wife of Vasudev. Vasudev, the father of Krishna, had 16 wives, and one of them was Rohini, the mother of Baladev. But Baladev is also described as the son of Devaki. So how could he be the son of both Devaki and Rohini? This was one of the questions put by Maharaj Parikshit to Shukadev Goswami, and it will be answered in due course. Maharaj Parikshit also asked Shukadev Goswami why Sri Krishna, just after his appearance as the son of Vasudev, was immediately carried to the house of Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan, Gokula. He also wanted to know that the activities of Lord Krishna were. He also wanted to know what the activities of Lord Krishna were while he was within Vrindavan and while he was in Mathura. Besides that, he was especially inquisitive to know why Krishna killed his maternal uncle Kamsa. Kamsa, being the brother of his mother, was a very intimate superior to Krishna. So, how was it that he killed Kamsa? Also, Maharaj Parikshit asked how many years Lord Krishna remained in human society, how many years he reigned over the kingdom of Dwarka, and how many wives he accepted there. A Kshatriya king is generally accustomed to accept more than one wife. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit also inquired about his number of wives. The subject matter of this book is Shukadev Goswami's answering of these and other questions asked by Maharaj Parikshit. The position of Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadev Goswami is unique. Maharaj Parikshit is the right person to hear about the transcendental pastimes of Krishna, and Shukadev Goswami is the right person to describe them. If such a fortunate combination is made possible, then Krishna Katha immediately becomes revealed, and people may benefit to the highest possible degree from such a conversation. This narration was presented by Shukadev Goswami when Maharaj Parikshit was prepared to give up his body, fasting on the bank of the Ganges. In order to assure Shukadev Goswami that by hearing Krishna Katha he would not feel tired, Maharaj Parikshit expressed himself very frankly. Hunger and thirst may give trouble to ordinary persons or to me, but the topics of Krishna are so nice that one can continue to hear them without feeling tired, because such hearing situates one in the transcendental position. It is understood that one must be very fortunate to hear Krishna Katha as seriously as Maharaj Parikshit did. He was especially intent on the subject matter because he was expecting death at any moment. Every one of us should be conscious of death at every moment. This life is not at all assured. At any time one can die. It does not matter whether one is a young man or an old man. So before death takes place, we must be fully Krishna conscious. At the point of his death, King Parikshit was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadev Goswami. When King Parikshit expressed his untiring desire to hear about Krishna, Shukadev Goswami was very much pleased. Shukadev was the greatest of all Bhagavat reciters, and thus he began to speak about Krishna's pastimes, which destroy all inauspiciousness in this age of Kali. Shukadev Goswami thanked the king for his eagerness to hear about Krishna, and he encouraged him by saying, "My dear king, your intelligence is very keen because you are so eager to hear about the pastimes of Krishna." He informed Maharaj Parikshit that hearing and chanting the pastimes of Krishna are so auspicious that the processes purify the three varieties of men involved. He who recites the transcendental topics of Krishna, he who hears such topics, and he who inquires about him. These pastimes are just like the Ganges water, which flows from the toe of Lord Vishnu. They purify the three worlds, the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna. Once the world was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of different kings, who were actually demons but were posing themselves as the royal order. At that time, the whole world became perturbed, and the predominating deity of this earth, known as Bhumi, went to see Lord Brahma to tell of her calamities due to the demoniac kings. Bhumi assumed the shape of a cow and presented herself before Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes. She was bereaved and was weeping just to invoke the Lord's compassion. She related the calamitous position of the earth, and after hearing this, Lord Brahma became much aggrieved, and he at once started for the ocean of milk, where Lord Vishnu resides. Lord Brahma was accompanied by all the demigods, headed by Lord Shiva, and Bhumi also followed. Arriving on the shore of the milk ocean, Lord Brahma began to pacify Lord Vishnu, who had formerly saved the earthly planet by assuming the transcendental form of a boar. In the Vedic mantras, there is a particular type of prayer called Purusha Sukta. Generally, the demigods offer their obeisances unto Vishnu, the Supreme Personality Godhead, by chanting the Purusha Sukta. It is understood herein that the predominating deity of every planet can see the Supreme Lord of the universe, Brahma, whenever there is some disturbance on his planet. And Brahma can approach the Supreme Lord Vishnu not by seeing him directly, but by standing on the shore of the ocean of milk. There is a planet within this universe called Shvetadvip, and on that planet there is an ocean of milk. It is understood from various Vedic literatures that just as there is a ocean, is the ocean of salt water on this planet, there are various kinds of oceans on other planets. Somewhere there is an ocean of milk, somewhere there is an ocean of oil, and somewhere there are oceans of liquor and many other types of liquids. The Purusha Sukta is the standard prayer which the demigods recite to appease the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shirdakshai Vishnu, because he is lying on the ocean of milk. He is called Shirdakshai Vishnu. He is the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through whom all the incarnations within this universe appear. After all the demigods offered the Purusha Sukta prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they apparently heard no response. Then Lord Brahma personally sat in meditation, and there was a message transmission from Lord Vishnu to Brahma. Brahma then broadcast the message to the demigods. That is the system of receiving Vedic knowledge. The Vedic knowledge is received first by Brahma from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the medium of the heart. As stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Teni Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye, the transcendental knowledge of the Vedas was transmitted to Lord Brahma through the heart. Here also, in the same way, only Brahma could understand the message transmitted by Lord Vishnu, and he broadcast it to the demigods for their immediate action. The message was this: the Supreme Personality of Godhead would appear on the earth very soon, along with his supreme powerful potencies. And as long as he remained on the earth planet to execute his mission of annihilating the demons and establishing the devotees, the demigods should also remain there to assist him. They should all immediately take birth in the family of the Yadu dynasty, wherein the Lord would also appear in due course of time. The Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Krishna, would personally appear as the son of Vasudev. Before his appearance, all the demigods, along with their wives, should appear in different pious families in the world just to assist the Lord in executing his mission. The exact word used here is tat priyartam, which means the demigods should appear on the earth in order to please the Lord. In other words, any living entity who lives only to satisfy the Lord is a demigod. The demigods were further informed that Ananta, the plenary portion of Lord Krishna, who is maintaining the universal planets by extending his millions of hoods, would also appear on earth before Lord Krishna's appearance. They were also informed that the external potency of Vishnu, Maya, with whom all the conditioned souls are enamored, would also appear by the order of the Supreme Lord just to execute his purpose. After instructing and pacifying all the demigods, as well as Bhumi with sweet words, Lord Brahma, the father of all Prajapatis, or progenitors of the universal population, departed for his own abode, the highest material planet called Brahmaloka. The leader of the Yadu dynasty, King Shurasena, was ruling over the country known as Mathura, wherein lies the city of Mathura. as well as the district known as Shudasena, which was named after him. On account of the rule of King Shudasena, Mathura became the capital of all the kings of the Yadus. Mathura was also made the capital of the kings of the Yadu dynasty, because the Yadus were a very pious family and knew that Mathura is the place where Lord Krishna lives eternally, just as he also lives in Dwarka. Once upon a time, Vasudeva, the son of Shudasena, just after marrying Devaki, was going home in his chariot with his newly wedded wife. The father of Devaki, known as Devaka, had contributed a sufficient dowry because he was very affectionate toward his daughter. He had contributed hundreds of chariots completely decorated with gold equipment. At that time, Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena, in order to please his sister Devaki, had voluntarily taken the reins of the horses of Vasudeva's chariot and was driving. According to the custom of the Vedic civilization, when a girl is married, the brother takes the sister and brother-in-law to their home. Because the newly married girl may feel too much separation from her father's family, the brother goes with her until she reaches her father-in-law's house. The full dowry contributed by Devaka was as follows: 400 elephants fully decorated with golden garlands, 15,000 decorated horses, and 1,800 chariots. He also arranged for 200 beautiful girls to follow his daughter. The Kshatriya system of marriage, still current in India, dictates that when a Kshatriya is married, a few dozen of the bride's young girlfriends, in addition to the bride, go to the house of the king. The followers of the queen are called maidservants, but actually they act as friends of the queen. This practice is prevalent since time immemorial, traceable at least to the time before the advent of Lord Krishna 5,000 years ago. So Vasudeva brought home another 200 beautiful girls along with his wife, Devaki. While the bride and bridegroom were passing along on the chariot, there were different kinds of musical instruments playing to indicate the auspicious moment. There were conch shells, bugles, drums, and kettle drums. Combined together, they were vibrating a nice concert. The procession was passing very pleasingly, and Kamsa was driving the chariot, when suddenly there was a miraculous sound vibrated from the sky, which especially announced to Kamsa, "Kamsa, you are such a fool. You are driving the chariot of your sister and your brother-in-law, but you do not know that the eighth child of this sister will kill you." Kamsa was the son of Ugrasena of the Bhoja dynasty. It is said that Kamsa was the most demoniac of all the Bhoja dynasty kings. Immediately after hearing the prophecy from the sky, he caught hold of Devaki's hair and was just about to kill her with his sword. Vasudeva was astonished at Kamsa's behavior, and in order to pacify the cruel, shameless brother-in-law, he began to speak as follows, with great reason and evidence. He said, "My dear brother-in-law Kamsa, you are the most famous king of the Bhodaja dynasty, and people know you are the greatest warrior and the vigilant king. How is it that you are so infuriated that you are prepared to kill a woman who is your own sister at this auspicious time of her marriage? Why should you be so much afraid of death? Death is already born along with your birth. From the very day you took your birth, you began to die. Suppose you are 25 years old. That means you have already died 25 years. Every moment, every second, you are dying. Why then should you be so much afraid of death? Final death is inevitable. You may die either today or in 100 years. You cannot avoid death. Why should you be so much afraid? Actually, death means annihilation of the present body. As soon as the present body stops functioning and mixes with the five elements of material nature, the living entity within the body accepts another body according to its present actions and reactions. It is just like when a man walks on the street, he puts his foot forward. And when he is confident that his foot is situated on solid ground, he lifts the other foot. In this way, one after another, the body changes and the soul transmigrates. See how the plant worm changes. The plant worms change from one twig to another so carefully. Similarly, the living entity changes his body as soon as the higher authorities decide on his next body. As long as a living entity is conditioned within this material world, he must take material bodies one after another. His present particular body is offered by the laws of nature according to the actions and reactions of this life. This body is exactly like one of the bodies which we always see in dreams. During our dream of sleep, we create so many bodies according to mental creation. We have seen gold, and we have also seen a mountain. So in a dream, we can see a golden mountain by combining the two ideas. Sometimes in dreams, we see that we have a body which is flying in the sky, and at that time, we completely forget our present body. Similarly, these bodies are changing. When you have one body, you forget the past body. During a dream, we may make contact with so many new kinds of bodies, but when we are awake, we forget them all. And actually, these material bodies are the creations of our mental activities. But at the present moment, we do not recollect our past bodies. The nature of the mind is flickering. Sometimes it accepts something and immediately rejects the same thing. Accepting and rejecting is the process of the mind in contact with the five objects of sense gratification: form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. In its speculative way, the mind comes in touch with the objects of sense gratification, and when the living entity desires a particular type of body, he gets it. Therefore, the body is an offering by the laws of material nature. The living entity accepts a body and comes out again into the material world to enjoy or suffer according to the construction of the body. Unless we have a particular type of body, we cannot enjoy or suffer according to our mental proclivities inherited from the previous life. The particular type of body is actually offered to us according to our mental condition at the time of death. The luminous planets like the sun, moon, or stars reflect themselves in different types of reservoirs, like water, oil, or ghee. The reflection moves according to the movement of the reservoir. The reflection of the moon is on the water, and the moving water makes the moon also appear to be moving, but actually the moon is not moving. Similarly, by mental concoction, the living entity attains different kinds of bodies, although actually he has no connection with such bodies. But on account of illusion, being enchanted by the influence of Maya, the living entity thinks that he belongs to a particular type of body. That is the way of conditioned life. Suppose a living entity is now in a human form of body. He thinks that he belongs to the human community or a particular country or particular place. He identifies himself in that way and unnecessarily prepares for another body which is not required by him. Such desires and mental concoctions are the cause of different types of bodies. The covering influence of material nature is so strong that the living entity is satisfied in whatever body he gets, and he identifies with that body with great pleasure. Therefore, I beg to request you not to be overwhelmed by the dictation of your mind and body. Vasudeva thus requested Kamsa not to be envious of his newly married sister. One should not be envious of anyone, especially because envy is the cause of fear both in this world and in the next, when one is before Yamaraj, the Lord of punishment after death. Vasudeva appealed to Kamsa on behalf of Devaki, stating that she was his younger sister. He also appealed at an auspicious moment, at the time of marriage. A younger sister or brother is supposed to be protected as one's child. The position is overall so delicate, Vasudeva reasoned, that if you kill her, it will go against your high reputation. In this way, Vasudeva tried to pacify Kamsa by good instruction, as well as by philosophical discrimination. But Kamsa was not to be pacified because his association was demoniac. Because of his demoniac association, he was a demon, although born in a very high royal family. A demon never cares for any good instruction. He is just like a determined thief. One can give him moral instruction, but it will not be effective. Similarly, those who are demoniac, or atheistic by nature can hardly assimilate any good instruction, however authorized it may be. That is the difference between demigods and demons. Those who can accept good instruction and try to live their lives in that way are called demigods, and those who are unable to take such good instruction are called demons. Failing in his attempt to pacify Kamsa, Vasudeva wondered how he would protect his wife Devaki. When there is imminent danger, an intelligent person should try to avoid the dangerous position as far as possible. But in spite of endeavoring by all intelligence, one fails to avoid the dangerous position. There is no fault on his part. But if, in spite of endeavoring by all intelligence, one fails to avoid the dangerous position, there is no fault on his part. One should try his best to execute his duties, but if the attempt fails, he is not at fault. Vasudeva thought of his wife as follows. For the present, let me save the life of Devaki. Then later on, if there are children, I shall see how to save them. He further thought, if in the future I get a child who can kill Kamsa, just as Kamsa is thinking, then both Devaki and the child will be saved because the law of providence is inconceivable. But now, some way or other, let me save the life of Devaki. There is no certainty how a living entity contacts a certain type of body, just as there is no certainty how a blazing fire comes in contact with a certain type of wood in the forest. When there is a forest fire, it is experienced that the blazing fire sometimes leaps over one tree and catches another by the influence of the wind. Similarly, a living entity may be very careful in the matter of executing his duties, but it is very difficult for him to know what type of body he is going to get in the next life. Maharaj Bharat was very faithfully executing the duties of self-realization, but by chance he developed temporary affection for a deer, and in his next life he had to accept the body of a deer. Vasudeva, after deliberating on how to save his wife, began to speak to Kamsa with great respect, although Kamsa was the most sinful man. Sometimes it happens that a most virtuous person like Vasudeva has to flatter a person like Kamsa, a most vicious person. That is the way of all diplomatic transactions. Although Vasudeva was deeply aggrieved, he smiled outwardly. He addressed the shameless Kamsa in that way because he was so atrocious. Vasudeva said to Kamsa, "My dear brother-in-law, please consider that you have no danger from your sister. You are awaiting some danger because you have heard a prophetic voice in the sky. But the danger is to come from the sons of your sister who are not present now. And who knows? There may or may not be sons in the future. Considering all this, you are safe for the present. Nor is there cause of fear from your sister. If there are any sons born of her, I promise that I shall present all of them to you for necessary action." Kamsa knew the value of Vasudeva's word of honor, and he was convinced by his argument. For the time being, he desisted from the heinous killing of his sister. Thus Vasudeva was pleased and praised the decision of Kamsa. In this way, he returned to his home. Each year thereafter, in due course of time, Devaki gave birth to a child. Thus she gave birth to 8 male children, as well as 1 daughter. When the first son was born, Vasudeva kept his word of honor and immediately brought the child before Kamsa. It is said that Vasudeva was very much elevated and famous for his word of honor, and he wanted to maintain this fame. Although it was very painful for Vasudeva to hand over the newly born child, Kamsa was very glad to receive him, but he became a little compassionate with the behavior of Vasudeva. This event is very exemplary. For a great soul like Vasudeva, there is nothing considered to be painful in the course of discharging one's duty. A learned person like Vasudeva carries out his duties without hesitation. On the other hand, a demon like Kamsa never hesitates in committing any abominable action. It is said, therefore, that a saintly person can tolerate all kinds of miserable conditions of life. A learned man can discharge his duties without awaiting favorable circumstances. A heinous person like Kamsa can act in any sinful way, and a devotee can sacrifice everything to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kamsa became satisfied by the action of Vasudeva. He was surprised to see Vasudeva keeping his promise and being compassionate upon him and pleased he began to speak as follows. My dear Vasudev, you need not present this child to me. I am not in danger from this child. I have heard that the eighth child born of you and Devaki will kill me. Why should I accept this child unnecessarily? You could take him back. When Vasudev was returning home with his firstborn child, although he was pleased by the behavior of Kamsa, he could not believe in him because he knew that Kamsa was uncontrolled. An atheistic person cannot be firm in his word of honor. One who cannot control the senses cannot be steady in his determination. The great politician Chanakya Pandit said, "Never put your trust in a diplomat or a woman." Those who are addicted to unrestricted sense gratification can never be truthful, nor can they be trusted with any faith. At that time, the great sage Narada came to Kamsa. He was informed of Kamsa's becoming compassionate to Vasudev and returning his firstborn child. Narada was very eager to accelerate the descent of Lord Krishna as soon as possible. He therefore informed Kamsa that in Vrindavan, personalities like Nanda Maharaj and all the other cowherd men and their wives on the other side, and on the other side, Vasudev, his father Shurasena, and all his relatives born in the family of Vrishni, and the Yadu dynasty, along with all their friends and well-wishers, were actually demigods. Narada warned Kamsa to be careful of them, since Kamsa and his friends and advisors were all demons. Demons are always afraid of demigods. After being thus informed by Narada about the appearance of the demigods in different families, Kamsa at once became very much alarmed. He understood that since the demigods had already appeared, Lord Vishnu must be coming soon. He at once arrested both his brother-in-law Vasudev and Devaki and put them in prison behind bars. Within the prison, shackled in iron chains, Vasudev and Devaki gave birth to a male child year after year, and Kamsa, thinking each of the babies to be the incarnation of Vishnu, killed them one after another. He was particularly afraid of the eighth child, but after the visit of Narada, he came to the conclusion that any child might be Krishna. Therefore, it was better to kill all the babies who took birth from Devaki and Vasudev. This action of Kamsa is not very difficult to understand. In the history of the world, there are many instances of persons in the royal order who have killed their father, brother, or whole family and friends for the satisfaction of their ambitions. There's nothing astounding. There's nothing astonishing about this, for members of the demoniac, greedy royal order can kill anyone for their nefarious ambitions. Kamsa was made aware of his previous birth by the grace of Narada. He learned that in his previous birth he had been a demon of the name Kalanemi, and that he had been killed by Vishnu. Having now taken his birth in the Bhoja family, he decided to become the deadly enemy of the Yadu dynasty. Krishna was going to take birth in that family, and Kamsa was very much afraid that he would be killed by Kamsa, just as he had been killed in his last birth. He first of all imprisoned his father, Ugrasena, because he was the chief king among the Yadu, Bhoja, and Andaka dynasties, and he also occupied the kingdom of Shurasena, Vasudev's father. He declared himself the king of all such places. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the first chapter of Krishna, the advent of Lord Krishna. So that's the end of that chapter. Hold on, don't do anything. Don't go anywhere. Don't adjust your dial on your set. Because I'm going to read to you one more thing that you'll like very much. You'll be saying, very good, by Sheshika Das. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 1, Text Number 4. And some very important purport. I think we have just enough time to finish it. And it was mentioned in Prabhupada's introduction. Nivritta tarsher upagiya manad bhavaushadach chotra manobi ramad ka utama shloka gunanuvadat puman virajita vinapashugnat. Glorification of the Supreme Personality of God, it is performed in the parampara system. That is. It is conveyed from spiritual master to disciple. Such glorification is relished by those no longer interested in the false temporary glorification of this cosmic manifestation. Descriptions of the Lord are the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Therefore, who will cease hearing such glorification of the Lord except a butcher or one who is killing his own self? Srila Prabhupada's purport. In India, it is the practice among the general populace to hear about Krishna, either from Bhagavad Gita or from Srimad Bhagavatam, in order to gain relief from the disease of repeated birth and death. Although India has now fallen, when there is a message that someone will speak about Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, thousands of people still gather to hear, just like all of you tonight. This verse indicates, however, that such recitation of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam must be done by persons completely freed from material desires, nidra-tatarshai. Everyone within this material world, beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, is full of material desires for sense enjoyment, and everyone is busy in sense gratification. But when thus engaged, one cannot fully understand the value of Krishna Katha, either in the form of Bhagavad Gita or in Srimad Bhagavatam. If we hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from liberated persons, this hearing will certainly free us from the bondage of material activities. But hearing Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by a professional reciter cannot actually help us achieve liberation. Krishna Katha is very simple. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As he himself explains, Matak Paratanam Nanyat Kinchidasti Dananjaya, O Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me. Bhagavad Gita 7.7. Simply by understanding this fact, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can become a liberated person. But especially in this age, because people are interested in hearing Bhagavad Gita from unscrupulous persons who depart from the simple presentation of Bhagavad Gita and distort it for their own personal satisfaction, they fail to derive the real benefit. There are big scholars, politicians, philosophers, and scientists who speak on Bhagavad Gita in their own polluted way, and people in general hear from them, but being uninterested in hearing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from a devotee. A devotee is one who has no other motive for reciting Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam than to serve the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore advised us to hear the glories of the Lord from a realized person. Bhagavat paro diya bhagavat stani. Unless one is personally a realized soul in the science of Krishna consciousness, a neophyte should not approach him to hear about the Lord, for this is strictly forbidden by Srila Sanatana Goswami, who quotes from the Padma Purana, Avaishnava mukodgirnam putam harikatamritam shravana naiva kartavyam sharpochishtam yata payaha. One should avoid hearing from a person not situated in Vaishnav behavior. A Vaishnav is nivritta trishna. That is, he has no material purpose, for his only purpose is to preach Krishna consciousness. So-called scholars, philosophers, and politicians exploit the importance of Bhagavad Gita by distorting its meaning for their own purposes. Therefore, this verse warns that Krishna Katha should be recited by a person who is nivritta trishna. Shukadeva Goswami epitomizes the proper reciter for Srimad Bhagavatam, and Maharaj Prakshit, who purposefully left his kingdom and family prior to meeting death, epitomizes the person fit to hear it. A qualified reciter of Srimad Bhagavatam gives the right medicine, bhavaushadi, for the conditioned souls. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore trying to train qualified preachers to recite Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita throughout the entire world, so that people in general in all parts of the world may take advantage of this movement and thus be relieved of the threefold miseries of material existence. The instructions of Bhagavad Gita and the descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam are so pleasing that almost anyone suffering from the threefold miseries of material existence will desire to hear the glories of the Lord from these books and thus benefit on the path of liberation. Two classes of men, however, will never be interested in hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who are determined to commit suicide and those determined to kill cows and other animals for the satisfaction of their own tongues. Although such persons may make a show of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam at a Bhagavat Saptaha, this is but another creation of the karmis who cannot derive any benefit from such a performance. The word Pashugna is important in this connection. Pashugna means butcher, persons fond of performing ritualistic ceremonies for elevation to the higher planetary systems, must offer sacrifices, yajñas, by killing animals. Lord Buddhadev therefore rejected the authority of the Vedas because his mission was to stop animal sacrifices which are recommended in Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Nindasi yajña vadeyaha shruti jatam sadaya hridaya darshita pashukatam keshavadrita buddha sharira jaya jagadisha hare jaya jagadisha hare jaya jagadisha hare. Even though animal sacrifices are sanctioned in Vedic ceremonies, men who kill animals for such ceremonies are considered butchers. Butchers cannot be interested in Krishna consciousness, for they are already materially allured. Their only interest lies in developing comforts for the temporary body. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya prahita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadau navadiyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination of devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. Bhagavad Gita 2:44. Srila Narottam Das Thakur says, Manusha janama paya Radha Krishna na bhajiya janiya shunya vishakai nu. Anyone who is not Krishna conscious and who therefore does not engage in the service of the Lord is also Pashugna, for he is willingly drinking poison. Such a person cannot be interested in Krishna Katha because he still has a desire for material sense gratification. He is not Nivritta Krishna. As it is said, Trivargikas te purusha vimukha hari medasaha. Those interested in trivarga, that is, in dharma, artha, and kama, are religious for the sake of achieving a material position with which to gain better facilities for sense gratification. Such persons are killing themselves by willingly keeping themselves in the cycle of birth and death. They cannot be interested in Krishna consciousness. For Krishna Katha topics about Krishna consciousness, there must be a speaker and a hearer, both of them whom can be interested in Krishna consciousness if they are no longer interested in material topics. One can actually see how this attitude automatically develops in persons who are Krishna conscious. Although the devotees of the Krishna consciousness movement are quite young men, they no longer read materialistic newspapers, magazines, and so on, for they are no longer interested in such topics. Nivritta Tarshai. They completely give up the bodily understanding of life for topics concerning Uttama Shloka, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual master speaks and the disciple hears with attention. Unless both of them are free from material desires, they cannot be interested in topics of Krishna consciousness. The spiritual master and disciple do not need to undergo anything more than Krishna, understand anything more than Krishna, because simply by understanding Krishna and talking about Krishna, one becomes a perfectly learned person. Yasmin vignate sarvam evam vignatum pavati. The Lord sits within everyone's heart, and by the grace of the Lord, the devotee receives instructions directly from the Lord Himself, who says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarvasya chaham ridisan nivishto matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha vedaishta sarver ahameva vedyo vedanta krid veda videva chaham. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. Krishna consciousness is so exalted that one who is perfectly situated in Krishna consciousness, under the direction of the spiritual master, is fully satisfied by reading Krishna Katha, as found in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar Vedic literatures. Since merely talking about Krishna is so pleasing, we can simply imagine how pleasing it is to render service to Krishna. When discourses on Krishna Katha take place between a liberated spiritual master and his disciple, Others also sometimes take advantage of hearing these topics and also benefit. These topics are the medicine to stop the repetition of birth and death. The cycle of repeat of birth and death, by which one takes on different bodies again and again, is called bhava, or bhava rog. If anyone, willingly or unwillingly, hears Krishna katha, his bhava rog, the disease of birth and death, will certainly stop. Therefore, Krishna katha is called bhavaushada, the remedy to stop the repetition of birth and death. Karmis, or persons attached to material sense enjoyment, generally cannot give up their material desires, but Krishna katha is such a potent medicine that if one is induced to hear Krishna kirtan, he will certainly be freed from this disease. A practical example is Dhruva Maharaj, who, at the end of his tapasya, was fully satisfied. When the Lord wanted to give Dhruva a benediction, Dhruva refused it. Swamin kritartos mi varam nayache. My dear Lord, he said, I am fully satisfied. I do not ask for any benediction for material sense gratification. We actually see that even young boys and girls in the Krishna consciousness movement have given up their long practice of bad habits like illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, because Krishna consciousness is so potent that it gives them full satisfaction. They are no longer interested in material sense gratification. And thus ends tonight's reading of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Part 1, the text beginning with Nivrittatarshir Upagiyamana. Devotees, for joining us tonight for this auspicious, hearing this auspicious vibration that cures all diseases of the mind and heart, and thus sets one on the path back home, back to Godhead. Anyone who hears Krishna katha regularly will naturally develop knowledge and detachment and will seek the position Krishna describes in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, of being equipoised, no longer being interested in entanglement in the material world. And then gradually, as one continues to hear, one will become entangled in hearing about Krishna, inasmuch as every living entity has a unique relationship with Krishna. And that unique relationship is revived by hearing Krishna katha. And just as a young girl becomes entangled by falling in love with a young boy, and a young boy becomes entangled by falling in love with a young girl and becomes preoccupied from all other duties in life, so similarly, a person who hears Krishna katha will progressively develop such love for Krishna that he or she will become uninterested in the material world and all its wranglings. Therefore, we thank everyone for joining this reading tonight. And also, please pass on Krishna katha to as many people as you can, especially distribute the Krishna book this month. We would like to break all records in history of distributing Krishna books to everyone in the Bay Area and beyond. Please send them out everywhere to anyone you know. Famous people should all have a Krishna book. They'll all accept it. It's the most beautiful book in the world. And everywhere you go, take Krishna books and give them to people and let them drink this Krishna katha. Before the Janmashtami hour arrives on midnight, let us satisfy the great acharyas by distributing Krishna's message to as many people as possible. Thank you very much. Om Tat Sat. Go Premanande.
Haribol.
Hari Hari Bol, all glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Everyone, please say Hare Krishna one more time.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Now, homework, everyone, you have to go outside on your front porch and say Hare Krishna as loud as you can, and then you can take breath.
Hare Krishna.
This one. Running out.
Lord Prema Mimne Hari Bo.
Hari Bo.
Hari Hari Hari.
Hari Hari Hari.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Oh my God.